what's up? It's your boy Steve Cardenas, aka Rocky the Red Power Ranger, and you are listening to the Carbonite Cruise Show.
Thank you,
man. Yeah,
I know, it's amazing.
I didn't know that, and I realized I wore the jacket. Seriously.
That's awesome. So how's the game treating you?
Wonderful, fantastic. Obviously, it's been that great that I'm losing my voice, so that's good. So we talk to a lot of people out there. It's been fun. You know, it's been a blast. And obviously, the hospitality's been great. So.
Oh, awesome. Love that. All right. By the way, if you guys don't know this, Joey, your autograph is on one of my best friends. You signed his leg.
Yeah.
In Salt Lake. He got it signed, and then that night he drove and got it tattooed on his leg. So
that's dedication.
It is massive. All right, so we have a few questions here. We'll start with the question right over here.
Sweet.
Hi, Joey.
Hello.
My question is for you. Way back in the day when you worked at Universal, you were the werewolf, correct?
That's correct.
Did you do with the show when as a werewolf, exactly?
I was a musical review. That's how funny this was. Universal, of course, has the Universal Studio Monsters. It's the werewolf, Frankenstein. Bride Frankenstein. Who else? Phantom of the Opera. What happens is it's called the Beetlejuice Graveyard Review Show. Beetlejuice would transform into these monsters into rock and roll. So I was a werewolf to where basically we had to sing and dance on a live show in 95 to 100 degree weather because there was no coverings. It was a shed. And it was legitimately outside in Orlando, Florida, Universal Studios. But did that for a while. But yeah, it was great. It was fun. Hot. I know why. So that maybe prepped me for the rabbit. I think for Mass Singer because it was ridiculously hot. But it was fun. Yeah, that's what I did. Sang and danced.
Right. That's awesome. Where that your start.
Yeah.
That's where you were discovered for instance.
We basically met two creative guys and I was like, hey, you know what? I sent them like this crappy demo tape and I said, listen, why don't you come over to Universal? I'll show you what I do. This is kind of what I do in that jogging. I'm a werewolf, but you know, picture me dancing, jumping around and singing. So yeah, that's what happened. Yeah, that
was it. It's absolutely amazing. All right. Next question.
Hey Joey.
What's going on?
By the way, I love your episode for Tom, Steve, Dave.
Oh, thanks, man.
And my question is, so you being close with the guys from Braco Jokers, what are your thoughts on people wanting you to join the cast now that Joan left?
Yeah, no, it's pretty interesting. I mean, hey, it's the same name, so that's good. I don't have to change anything on that. But, you know, it's flattering. I think depending on what they want to do, and I think they're just keeping their core, but what they've been doing is, of course, the new season that they have, they're bringing celebrities in, and people that always want to work with them. We just wrapped up the after party right before we flew here. Me and Murray went together in New York City, shot the after party show, which I host. It's kind of like a wrap-up party, so if you ever see The Walking Dead, there's The Talking Dead. Very similar kind of thing when we talk about the episode. But they came up to me, they gave me, I don't know if I'm supposed to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. They gave me a check, and I was like, what's the check for? It's redeemable for a full episode. So basically, if you see the celebrities, they only do like a challenge or two. I'm doing the full episode, so if I have to get punished, I get punished. So yeah, we do one episode, so we'll see what happens. Maybe they like it, maybe they'll keep me, but right now it's been fun that they've been welcoming to do something like this because they've never done that before. So probably 9 times out of 10, I'm going to probably get punished. You're going to figure out a way to get me stumped a few times so that I'll be able to get the punishment. So see what I'm nervous. Trust me, the day they told me the next morning, night, I couldn't even sleep. I'm like, I got to do it.
Awesome. I look forward to it.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
You do so much. You sing, you act, you do all these things. Like, what is your passion? Like, you started off with singing. And then you start doing acting.
I think my passion is performing. It doesn't matter what it is, where it is, how it is. I think just for me, I just love performing. It's just fun to be in front of an audience and get that instant reaction. You know, when you're doing films, it's different, but it's interesting because you do the film, you think some of the things are funny, but you never know the reaction until people see the film. So, you know, with concerts and shows like that, it's a lot more, I guess, gratification in the sense to get that reaction right out of the way.
Now, Dan Farr, the owner of the
Man, Dan's awesome. Yeah.
He said something to me, and I want to verify if this is true.
Okay.
He heard that you actually filmed a little cameo, but it ended up getting cut for Star Wars.
Episode, yeah.
Yeah, episode 2 and a Jedi. Yeah. Is that true?
That is 100% true. It was myself, Chris, and I believe JC, and my brother actually was there with me. And we went to Island Industrial with Magic, and we knew some people that were there, but they were like, hey, we stayed over in the Skywalker Ranch. And then the next morning, we walked over to ILM and saw the things that they were shooting. Like, hey, would you like to be a part of this? Because usually they get extras or people that work at ILM to do some of the background shots, and they'll add people in there. So the Clone Wars scene, and I think there was the scene where Yoda and you have Ewan McGregor and Yoda's floating in that little hover thing.
Yeah.
We were supposed to be in that hallway, and then we were supposed to be in the fight scene. And they cut us out.
Oh.
But yeah, it's so funny because I'm trying, I'm like asking, like, where is the footage? Because they had the footage somewhere. Yeah. And they even documented, I remember there was a camera there, George Lucas was there, which was awesome. So I can just say, George Lucas directed me, which is awesome. But it was one of those things, which is surreal. It was fun, yeah. And I'm trying to figure out why I want to get that freaking footage. I don't know where it is.
Was it surreal to see George Lucas in person like that?
Well, we met him before a few times, actually. When he was doing the audio, the editing, believe it or not, for episode one, he flew, I think we were in San Diego or something. Him and his daughter flew in to see the concert. So we have, there's a video, two of us have a camera. My brother documented everything back in the day. He was almost like a videographer for us. So there is definitely footage of it, like where George is standing there, we're talking about stuff, like, what does he do? He's like, oh, I'm doing the editing for that. Like, that's awesome. Like, we don't care about your daughter, I'm sorry. Tell us more, George. Yeah. And, you know, his daughter's like, we want to take a picture. I'm like, of course. But it was just fun. It was really cool that he came out, and I've been to the ranch probably like two or three times, and it was awesome. We did Robot Chicken. I did actually an episode of Star Wars, the first Star Wars episode of Robot Chicken.
Yeah.
I did a couple of voices for us. So they brought all of us out to Skywalker Ranch to watch the episode in the theater there. But then the surprise was he came out, George did again. He was like, hey, since you guys are here, it's the anniversary of Empire Strikes Back. So we watched Empire Strikes Back in the theater, which was awesome. So much fun.
That's
cool.
Hello.
Hello.
In the beginning of your career, how did you get over stage fright? And do you still get stage fright after all these years?
The funniest thing, and I'll never forget this, two times I've actually been like almost stage fright where I legitimately pissed my pants. My was young as heck. My dad did these shows. I went to Catholic school. They were doing like plays and things for the church to raise money. So my dad, you know, was heavily into the arts and stuff. I was like, you know what, let's do this play about movies and music. And there were clips of like different, like scenes of different movies. So my scene, when I was very young, I can't remember, probably 5 or 6 years old, I was Pinocchio. So I had to hide underneath this counter thing. And I was so nervous, I think I did seriously piss my pants. That's another story. But the other time that I really got, it's always like the first performances of a show that I kind of get nervous, but I never got stage fright. But when I was in high school, the very first audition, I chickened out. There was a video of a Shakespeare play, a one-eyed play, a musical in the year of school. So when I'm a freshman in high school, I went to go audition for the first play. I got scared crap, and I didn't do it. Second play was the one I played. I was going to audition for that. Did an audition for it. And I was like, oh my gosh. I'm like, I have to do it because I want to perform. But I'm like, why am I so nervous? Because I think it was because you think about the rejection. After a while, as you get older, of course, when you're younger, you're thinking about it. But after a while, you have to think, even if it's a rejection, it's a great learning tool. It's a great learning step of going, okay, so you didn't hire me. So what did I do wrong? You know, it's that kind of thing. You think, well, let me work up on whatever I need to work up on. There's something wrong. So over that, I don't know, just from doing improv as the years go on, I have no fear. Don't care. It's like, let's go, let's roll, let's happen. You know, that kind of thing.
Do you still get it a little bit? Do you still get a little bit?
What is, yeah, of course. Like the first initial stuff, or if you really sit there and you go, oh man, I don't remember that line, and it's coming. You draw a blank and you go, oh my God, here it comes. It's happened before. I did Rent on Broadway, and there's a scene right before a song called La Boheme where I hold up a camera and literally it goes, like everybody sings La Vie Boheme, and then the light just, everything gets dark and it's only on me. I'm supposed to deliver some lines. I stood there and I went. And then I just hear people laughing behind me. The cast is laughing because I have, my brain went blank. All I said was something about a fire on a wall that made no sense. And there's a lot of, we call them rent heads. It's all the people in the front row, they've actually won tickets and they see the show over and over again. So I'm looking for them to feed me a line as if they know I'm going, nobody gave me anything. And I was like, fire's on the wall and something about some kiss. And yeah, and everybody just started cracking up my heart. Like, oh. And, you know, you just gotta roll it off your shoulders. You know, it happens.
Thank you.
Do you feel that when you were being the werewolf, I'm assuming that can help prepare you for when you were in sync and the dancing, the performing, because your concerts were huge.
Yeah, it's one of those things where what you see is what you get, and you know, you're putting in the work. We, especially within sync and even just shows in general, you know, we put in so much work where there's times we're critiquing ourselves. There were times that on tour, maybe not many people know, but after every show, we would have VHS tape back in the day. We would videotape it, they would have the cameras, we'd videotape everything, and then we would watch it on the bus as we're going to the next city and be like, okay, well, you were off there, move over here, your vocals were a little off there, make sure we do this. The and we would just critique each other, almost like a football game when you're watching, you know, the plays back, and you go, okay, this is what we're going to do. Same thing. So we rehearsed, we critiqued each other, we corrected stuff, and then just made it try as perfect as we can.
Did the dancing ever affect your singing? Because it seems like...
Yeah. I mean, there are notes that are flying left and right that are the greatest because we're dancing huffing and puffing. I mean, it happens. It's life. And I think that's why it was really good, because a lot of times you see solo artists that do take breaks and stuff like that, but since we were a five-guy group, JC and Justin did a lot of leads, it was switching it off, so it made it a little bit easier, I would say. But yeah, I mean, it's a total cardio workout. You know, a lot of times when we're doing the rehearsals, we're talking the words through just to keep the breathing going. Not to say we're, you know, if we're marking something, we do everything without the music. We kind of sing through it. Because when you're just doing the choreography and then you add it with the vocals and then you add it with the microphone where you have to switch hands if we're doing something else, it's like, okay, how do we figure this out? And it's just a slow process. We just speed it up.
How long did it take you guys to learn all the choreography?
Back in the day, when we first started, it took us probably about 2 or 3 days, maybe sometimes almost a week. But then towards the end, we would do it like a song a day. We were learning pretty much a song a day. Yeah, we're the choreography, learning it okay, and then the next day we add another one. Or sometimes we do 2 nights a day.
Well, speaking of your boy band days, did you feel like when you were in sync, you had to maintain a specific, clean image? Even though, you're a grown adult,
It was weird because at the very beginning they kind of kept that. Was in Europe, boy bands were popular before we came over here. We were in Germany, Austria, and Switzerland, gosh, for about 2.5 years. And that's where pop was really huge over there. Over here was more like grunge in the States. So there was an image over there that it's the clean cut, everybody wears the same clothes. But we wanted to become that in that sense because of our name. We were in sync, so the style and everything. But as we kind of got the same thing, as we got older, you had different styles and different flavors, so we just started to change up when we came into the States. But there was always that, we were in Germany, and you could be 18 years old, I believe, to drink. Of course, me, JC, and Chris were the three that could do that at that time, but we didn't, and we were at Oktoberfest, and we didn't even do it, we just stood there going, because they're like, well, you don't want to drink, they put that in our head, there's an image in the sense of, I wouldn't say being a bad boy or anything, but just an image, and be kind of like, okay, well, you're not supposed to say how many girlfriends, why not? Who cares? I mean, in a sense of, yeah, I get it, women are going to have that dream, but even though they're still going to have that dream, regardless of wanting to be with you or date you or whatever the case may be, just hanging out with you. So it was interesting that whole kind of weird thing, as we started to obviously get older. I mean, I was with my girlfriend, or my ex-wife, gosh, for almost 10 years, dated 10 years, married for 10. So it was that kind of thing to where, there were certain times that we didn't say much, or we just said, hey, I'm sleeping. Meanwhile, my girlfriend was behind me. So it's one of those. It was one of those things that, again, at the early stage. But as we got older, as people get older, you kind of understand the whole thing about it. And I admire that person for that music. Yes, he's a good-looking person, something like that. Maybe one day that's a dream if he gets divorced.
Love you. Okay.
Thank you.
I love it. A friend of mine and I watch it all the time. So just wanted to know if there's any big memories you have of that, anything, favorite time from filming that.
Oh, it was a blast. It was one of our first kind of major movies that me and Lance did. The weird thing about it is, if I'm not mistaken, I believe I shot my Big Fat Greek Wedding first, and then On the Line, but I think On the Line came out before Big Fat Greek Wedding did, which is weird. I think it was on the shelf for almost 2 years. But for On the Line, it was awesome because it was one of those carefree moments where I was just kind of acting like myself, goofiness, and it was just kind of me. And then it was cool. It was oh, Richie Sambora's in the film. That's awesome. From Bon Jovi, that's great, And then it's really interesting because Emmanuel Shrieky was one of the first times she's ever done kind of a bigger film before. She started her career kind of moving up, did Entourage and all this other stuff. But it was a great experience. The funny experience was, though, is when basically I had my facial hair and everything else. They're like, we want to change your look a little bit. What does that mean? We'll shave your face. Okay, we'll shave my face. Then they're like, we have a salon, we want you to do stuff to your hair. And they never told me what I was going to do. So my hair looked like a calico cat. It had 80 million different colors in it. And then right after we shot the film, we shot the Celebrity album all cover. So I had my hair like that, and I had less facial hair. So I was like, all right, this is interesting. But you rolled the punches and had fun with it,
Was there ever any mishaps that you had on some like concert on stage, that some many stories?
Wardrobe malfunctions many times. One of those, I was on Broadway with Brent, and I split my pants literally from the front all the way to the back. So that when I'm doing the show, before I get on stage, I was just standing like this the whole time. Doing the scenes, and I'm like, okay, this is really good. How are you? Don't turn around. Yeah, literally, thank goodness that I had dark underwear on. That was good. But then we were doing a tour, and I was singing the only solo I had, the song Celebration. So there's these ramps that came down to a slant to the front of the stage. It was wet. So the first word out of my mouth is a body. Pop! Bam! Right on my back. I'm looking up at the ceiling, and everybody's watching, and I just went, there's a body going on. I just keep my legs up on the floor, just keep on going. I got back up and just go downstairs. It happens. One time during Space Cowboy. Space Cowboy, we had this thing in the stadium where we would, it's like almost like a pulley system where we'd bring us all the way down to another stage. It was way up at the top. Of course, the only one that breaks is mine. We're all going, and all of a sudden it goes, and it stops. Everybody else is going for the number, and there's a whole bunch of dancing and stuff going on. And now I'm in the air in this harness, looking down, and I don't know what's going on. I see tech guys running, and I'm going, is this thing going to snap? And I'm just going to fall right on people. And news was made today when Joey Fatone killed 5 people in the audience. But I was sitting there going, what is going on? And then all of a sudden, I'm jerking. And it just starts to slowly go. As the show is still going on, performance, the guys are dancing around. I'm just waving like an idiot. Apparently, with the computer, they can reset itself, so it reset it like it was in the beginning of it, or I'm sorry, at the end, so it wouldn't go anywhere. So the guys were manually pulling it to slowly bring me all the way down. It was hilarious. It was like the whole number, like the whole dance number and everything. It was just like, keep singing, guys. Stupid. What happened to you? Hey, happened to you, I roll with it, you know?
Amazing. Okay. How you doing, Joey?
Fantastic.
Hey, you and the fellas. And back in the day, ever get together, presently?
Yeah, we still hang out every once in a while. Not completely. We haven't hung out completely as a group, but there's been many times I've hung out with Justin, or I've hung out with Lance. Me, Chris, and Lance were just at a wedding just recently. We all are on a text message and an email because we still do merchandise stuff, so we have to agree on everything. So we're constantly talking about like that stuff as well. But it's been interesting because everybody's been having families. I'm on the cusp of like, thank goodness, I got a 21-year-old and a 12-year-old. My 12-year-old, I'm like, get out the door, I gotta come back. But like, Chris is just starting his family, Lance is just starting his family, Justin has his family, JC just likes to chill. No kids yet for him, but who knows. But yeah, it's been interesting how they're now, you know, they're being parents. So now it's kind of a different chapter for them. That's why people are like, when are you guys gonna get them? Well, who knows, but let's find out what they're doing with their family first until they, you know, as they get older and caring, start to go to school. It gets a little bit easier, obviously, but when you're, you know, 24/7 with a child, it's a little different. So, yeah.
I loved you Dancing with the Stars.
Thank you very much.
Thanks,
I appreciate
for the
it.
Sign and the picture.
Okay, yeah. I appreciate that, though.
Hello.
Hello.
My question for you is, obviously you're a really good host for the Common Knowledge show, and I want to ask, what came the creation of Common Knowledge?
Game Show Network always had just repeat game shows. All they did was just buy them from another network and just play it on their show on the network. But they wanted to have original content, so I think the first one they did was America Says, which was John Michael Higgins, and then they did Common Knowledge. I'm not sure exactly how the game actually came about. I can't remember who pitched it per se, but they had a few people in mind to host it. And we kept saying, literally, I switched over agencies right at that time, and we kept telling them, get me in the room, we'll get the job. Don't worry about it, we'll have fun. I love the concept, I love the idea. Let's talk to them, we'll figure it out. I was on an airport connecting flights in between having a conversation with these people. And just, you know, they just wanted a personality, they wanted anything else. So we're having this conversation, blah, 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 this and that. And literally, like 2 days later, like, hey, we'd love you to be the host. We'll start rehearsals. This, and I was like, okay. And then we got into rehearsal where it's literally just two tables, and you kind of break it down. We do the run through and see kind of how well I interact with the people. How well am I? Because, you know, sometimes it's not all just about hosting and the information. It's really getting getting the contestants to relax, getting the contestants to feel comfortable, because a lot of times it is nerve-wracking when you're on a show and the lights are there, cameras are there, and these are just regular people that want to be contestants. And it's one of those things where you get people that are excited they're gone, or they're nothing. They just give you dead, and you're like, oh my gosh, I need to do something. You know, so for me, I guess, you know, from the hosting stuff, I know, trust me, when I first did hosting, I was horrible. Couldn't read a prompter. It was awful. 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 But you know, practice makes perfect, so.
Hi, Kelly. I know I've read things and heard things, but I kind of want to hear it straight from you. How did the hiatus happen? Like, was it discussions that you guys were talking about up to that point? Did it kind of suddenly happen?
It was a slow progress, I think. Honestly, because what happened was is everybody, again, as we got older, everybody wanted to do different things. Lance wanted to go up in space. But he became a cosmonaut. He actually was, back in the day, went to Russia, became a cosmonaut, it was crazy, and then was going to do this whole thing up in space, but then I think there was a show that was bringing stuff up or something, nobody was in it, thank goodness, but it blew up, and then they were like, no, we ain't doing it again, and canceled the whole thing. As that was going on, we were doing Challenge with the Children, taking that kind of hiatus, and in that time, Justin started writing his own stuff, so he was like, hey, I want to do a solo. Great. What I believe the record company didn't have in mind for us, that they were going to try to get him to be the next solo artist, per se. Because every time we would do something, we did the MTV Awards, and we actually, I think, announced him. For some reason, the record company was like, oh, yeah, we'll all get together, we'll do the red carpet. But only the four of us did the red carpet, not Justin. And I know it wasn't really like him doing that, but just like business, when something's starting to go and the traction's starting to go with someone else and things are going, you go, okay, well, do we keep the group or do we do the solo? Where do we work at for that, for the record company? And they went more with, I believe, Justin. So for me, the only thing that I was like, yo, man, just tell me, let me know kind of thing was like, we were waiting for so long and I could have done a lot more other opportunities before that. And I think that was the only thing for me that was kind of like, damn, that sucks. But other than that, it was like, dude, you do you, man. We support you, go for it. Just like anybody else, if somebody else in the group was doing great, we try to support them as much as we can doing stuff like that. So once around, I think it was, I can't remember, it was the Challenge for Children in Miami. I don't remember the year. I think it was probably 2001, 2000, something. But it was a time we sat down together. It was like, hey, man, Justin was like, you know what, I want to do some more solo stuff, and that's going to deter me from doing stuff with NSYNC. I'm like, yo, man, good luck. Let's figure this out. Sucks. It is what it is. But let's, you know, for me, I was like, I don't know. For me, I was always like, kind of like, okay, now what can I do on my own? You know what I mean? Then it gave me open opportunities. Then I started doing Rent on Broadway, and I did Little Shop of Horrors, and I did Dancing with the Stars, and then started hosting. So it led me to something completely different, which gets back to your whole thing of loving to perform. It wasn't going to stop me. I wasn't going to go, oh, it seems dying. No, it's like, it's an opportunity for me to go open up other doors that I've never been able to experience or express my interest in. So, I mean, seriously, by the time, I don't even remember, by the time, so maybe like 2005 or 6. I mean, there were so many things that I did already. It was like I directed a video. I you know, produced a couple of shows. I hosted a bunch of game shows. I did a bunch of movies. You know, Big Fat Greek Wedding came out, you know, actually during when the thing sang. But now it's cool that 15 years later we shot the second one, and now we're talking about doing the third one in June, July. So, man, just actually, Nia just messaged us just now. We're on a group text, which is hilarious. It's like Nia, who plays my cousin, it's G and my sister, and the guy who plays Nick. And it's really cool because all of a sudden now it's like we are kind of, we've been together so many times with our family, but she's like giving us heads up going, this is where we're trying to shoot, we're trying to figure things out. So we'll hopefully be in Greece in June, July for Big Fat Greek Wedding 3.
I know the fans, like, crowds have waited a long time for it. I'm a fan waiting for NSYNC to get
back. Well, I appreciate it.
It will happen.
Good luck to all.
When my Big Fat Greek Wedding came out, that was like, such a sleeper hit. Also, it just took off.
It was the biggest romantic comedy of all time at that time. It was crazy because it was a $5 million budget.
Don't say it like that.
It grossed over $280 million in theaters alone, which is unreal. Which is like kind of, and it was one of those things where it stayed on the shelf for about 2 years. We shot it, nobody cared about it, and then Nia started doing all these Greek festivals. She traveled around and then started opening up theaters, and more and more people wanted to see it. More and more people was like, what is going on here? And it was just weird how, you know, a boy band guy, literally how that audition came in. It was at Playtone Productions, where Tom Hanks, that's his company, he owns, I walked in there just to say hi to some people that I knew, working girls in the office, like, oh, they're gonna have an audition for a movie. It would be great if this is a small part. I know you're recording with NSYNC, so this might be a fun little opportunity for you. I was like, all right, what's the audition? Like, no, now. I was like, really? Hanging inside. I walked in the room, did the audition, left, didn't think anything of it. Then they called me back, I'm like, hey, they want you to do it. I was like, really? I was like, yeah, it's a small part, but it's not a big deal. I was like, okay. Not knowing what was gonna happen.
That's crazy.
Similarly, another movie, The Cooler. I did a movie called The Cooler with Alec Baldwin and William H. Macy, which, you know, was not the greatest movie, but it was another independent film where I became this lounge singer or something. I was like, okay. And that became a great movie. It's interesting to get into something and be successful, especially if it's an ensemble, which is really cool. I mean, again, with the group, the same thing. It's just, I don't know. I've been blessed, I've been lucky, but then also, you know, with that luck, you have to keep going with it. You know what I mean? When people go, oh, you got lucky doing this, or oh, you got lucky doing, yeah, I got lucky to get into the group, but then I have to sustain myself to get into whatever I'm doing. So it's always funny when people go, oh, you're lucky. At first I was, and then I have to keep that luck going. But not luck, but it's more perseverance, it's more, you know, performing and getting out there.
Good morning. I was wondering if you would talk about your experience or your favorite memory on The Masked Singer.
The Masked Singer was weird. It was one of those ones where, you know, I did dance, and this is the reason why. I did Dancing with the Stars, and the casting lady, Dina Katz is her name, she's also the casting for The Masked Singer. So my manager has been talking to her about it before. Always like, my manager's great because he'll call people like, hey, what's going on? What's going on? Just to see if there's anything going on for my number. So she's going, we're doing this show for The Masked Singer, we're looking for these people, blah, blah, blah. I was like, what do you think about Joey? I was like, I didn't even think about that. She didn't think about that. So she went back to them, called me up, and they were just casting the final people. So I think there was two or three, and there was two costumes that they gave me. They showed me one that was like this alien with these huge tentacles that came out, almost like a spider-ish kind of alien, and the other one was a rabbit. So they said, you know, here's the show. Here's the costumes that we're thinking. And I was like, cool. I said, can you put red eyes in it? Can you light those up? Because it looks just too dark. It'd be kind of like a Donnie Darko kind of idea with the eyes. I was like, yeah, we can do that. I was like, cool. Put the head on, crowd, look at it. I was like, this is so stupid. What am I doing? You know, and then you literally, because you walk in the room, you see the monster head with the green eye. I'm like, and this is the first time, again, nobody's seen this stuff. In Korea, I believe, that's where they have the show. It's where it first originated from. And it's actually a clip on YouTube of Ryan Reynolds doing it to promote Deadpool, I believe is what it was. So he sang it, but they had these little cheesy masks. Of course, the States, they take it a step further. You're a big character, like a cartoon in the theme park. So I get this, I do the rehearsals, and then now it's time to head on to do the rehearsal, and I'm going, okay. And I've never gotten claustrophobic before. I never had that feeling, and I got it for some reason. I think the heat from breathing, I'm like, yo, I said, can I take this off right after the performance? Like, no, you gotta talk to Nick. And I have an interview, I'm like, what? No, I gotta take this off. I'm like, oh, you'll be all right. I'm like, nah, I don't know about that. So during the rehearsal, I had to mentally, seriously go, okay, just breathe. If I'm focused on it, I'm okay. So the weird thing was, I'm like, so we don't get to see any performances whatsoever. They kept us in pipe and drink rooms everywhere. We were in trailers. Even our managers, anybody that worked with us that was coming with us, had to wear like basically a graduation robe and a kid's mask. So is it a cat? It was like a morphin ray, it was a body morphin power, it was anything, it was anybody and everything. And it was like, what if people just walk around mask on, what are we doing here? But then when you see the show, you understand. And it's that kind of fun where it keeps the suspense because we didn't even know who anybody was. I never got nervous because never saw the performances. I think the only performance that I saw was Alien, which was LaToya Jackson, where the first performance is a head-to-head. That's the only performance I saw. So every time we would go, they would stop everything. One person like myself would go backstage. I would have like this other mask on. We'd get in this little room, put all our gear on, put everything on, check our microphones, go out to the performance, do the interview, get back, unchange, and leave, and be done with the show. Then when they did like the finale to kick people off, we put our mask on, go out there, or you're gone, then you move. That's it. And then it repeated. And it was like, I want to see everybody else's performance. You're like kind of looking around, and they would not let you talk. They would not. There were people standing next to us just to make sure we didn't talk to the contestants when we were there and with each other. So it was hilarious. It was like a big bunch of characters going, can't see your face though.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. So My favorite performance that you guys did as NSYNC is with Christopher Cross, when he did Sailing, and I saw him perform like last year, but it was great. Just wanted to let you know that. But also, I know you're a big Disney fan, so I was wanting to know what your favorite Disney movie is.
Disney movie? That's tough. I'd have to say, well, depending on cartoon or Pixar, are we going with animation?
One of each would be great.
Yeah. Obviously, Toy Story would be the first one for that one for me. So that was the first one. Actually, I think it was when I graduated high school in 95 when it came out. I think, it's a toss up. I'm a big fan of The Lion King, but also Little Mermaid.
Yeah.
Those two are kind of up there. You know what I mean? It was weird. My daughter was, when my second kid, Chloe, she would watch, because I don't even know, like, I always ask her, like, how did you watch it? But she loved it so much. And you watch it now, you kind of go, wow, this is really great. Was Dumbo, because the music is so subdued. It's just so just nice and tranquil. Every time I watch, she's like, again, I'm like, are you serious? I can't watch. I fall asleep. But it's like, one of the, it's so weird because the classics are so amazing, but yet, if you notice, they're very, very just, I don't know, the way they edit the audio is very just subduing. It's like, but yeah.
Perfect, thank you.
Of all the things you've done post NSYNC, what would you consider to be your favorite?
Wow, before NSYNC.
After
NSYNC.
Yeah.
There's too many. You know what? I think Rent was probably one of the biggest ones for me because it was the first time I was out on my own. I mean, I was with an ensemble cast again, but to do something like that, to be, you know, it said, you know, Rent featuring Joey Fatone was weird. And to be able to do that the first time I walked out on stage, I didn't know what reaction I was going to get. And no lie, everybody, in the beginning of Rent, everybody kind of takes their place. And Mark, who's the character that I play, is kind of like the narrator. So he comes out and starts the show. And it's one of those things that was really cool because I remember even getting out there because usually you have the scarf, you get ready, and everybody's there. And the first thing you do is you check. I don't know why they did this, but it was almost like to check everybody's good, everybody's ready. So you literally walk around, you turn around, you go back, and then, and then I turned around and people just went nuts. And I was like, this is really weird. It was just odd, you know, with those things. But it was like, I think Rank was probably one of my bigger ones for me. Yeah, because it kind of started just stuff to go, hey man, you can do this, not in a mean way, but you can do this on your own. You know what I mean? It was that kind of thing.
Thank you.
Cool.
Hi, I was just curious, early in your career with the group, how much creative control and input were you getting?
We actually had not too, it was weird because it was a combination because we didn't know any better, I think. But we know what we liked. So as far as music and stuff like that, we're like, oh yeah, we like that song. Yeah. It wasn't like, well, you know, you're going to sing this and you're going to do this. But it was more or less of going, a lot of times too, because they did have somewhat of a formula per se where they're like, well, you know, with Lou Pearlman and Johnny Wright, they were co-managing Backstreet Boys at the time too. So like doing that, we saw what Backstreet was doing, and it was kind of like, not to emulate them, but it was like, how can we do this better? So it was one of those things of just, and for us, you know, we were very tight on the vocals, very tight on doing five-part harmony. That's what obviously came first before even the dancing, the thought of dancing, because, I mean, Lance can move, Chris wasn't the greatest dancer either, I was fairly okay. But, you know, Jason Justin did the Mickey Mouse Club, and they were doing choreography all the time. They were doing shows. They were doing stuff that I wanted to do all the time. You know, obviously working at Universal, so it's very similar. But a lot more things were getting thrown at them, I think, at the time quicker. So the process of them learning was a lot quicker, I think. But it was just, it was interesting to have, like, the process was just, it was interesting to get everybody to do that. It was, again, I'm trying to relive it now in my head. But wow. What time is it? How early is it in the morning? Jesus. Sorry. Ask your question again because I just went blank on it. I just went off to a little tangent. What were you saying again, the damn question?
About the creative anyway.
Thank you. We picked some of the songs. Sailing was actually one of my ideas. I heard an acapella version by a group called The Blenders do it. And I was like, I would love to do a version of Sailing, something different. Did something like that. As we got older, we had more control over things. JC and Justin started writing more songs because they were really writers. Concepts of videos and ideas and stuff for staging. Bunch of stuff I came up with Chris, sometimes Lance did. You know, we did a stadium tour and all these different things. We had these different stupid toys where the song up against the wall. We were like, you know, it'd be great if you have a Velcro wall. We throw each other up on the wall. We stick. Let's do it. Then there was the walking treadmills. There was these treadmills on the floor. So when we stood, we would glide across the floor. So, like, we had a lot of creative control as we got older. But at the very beginning, we didn't know much. So it was kind of like, help us or figure this out, and then we'll take it from there, kind of thing. And it was nice that that after a while, they trusted us. It's tough. There was one time we did the song Pop. It was redone by a gentleman called BT, who's a kind of a DJ back in the day, but he also is a great musician. He plays every freaking instrument known to man. And Clive Calder, who was the head of Jive, was like, who's this BT? I don't get it. I was like, I don't get it. I said, well, we hear what's out there. You're in your office doing the things and listening to music, but we're on stage listening to what our fans like and want. So that's where it became a little bit interesting, like, you know, butt heads. He's like, well, maybe we should get a little more, you know, a little more beat to it. We're like, okay. We didn't change anything. We gave it back to him again. He goes, oh yeah, it sounds better now. So yeah, as more and more, we got more control.
So first off, you and my mom have a lot in common. You're around the same age, two kids that are around the same age. She's been divorced and she's pretty hot, if I didn't say so. So if you know, ever want a number. But
I'll talk to you later.
Was there ever a point coming up in the industry, like the performance industry, where you were just starstruck, like in awe of
something? Oh yeah. Many times. One of the first times that we opened up, right after we were in Germany, we came back, we opened up for Janet Jackson. We did her Velvet Rope Tour, and every time I was like, oh, we're gonna meet her, where is she? We're gonna meet Janet around. Oh my God, she's so pretty. We met her briefly at one point. The funniest thing ever, I remember, I was walking backstage and I had Dippin' Dots. Dippin' Dots just started to come out. And I'm walking down the hallway and there's a curtain where her dressing was. And all of a sudden she opens up the curtain and she goes, hey, hey, what's up? She goes, what you got there? I said, Dippin' Dots. She goes, can I try it? I go, yeah. I hand it to her. She takes it, disappears in the room. I go, hey, it's my ice cream. She comes back and it's like a couple pieces gone. What the hell did you take of my ice cream? I don't know what she did. She was just messing around. It was hilarious. So I ran in and I was like, I can't believe I'm doing this. I'm gonna run in the dressing room and grab the ice cream out of my hands. It was my ice cream. What are you doing that? And I guess it was her and my choreographer, a buddy of ours, this guy Gil, now he's a big friend of mine. They were back, they just busted chops to take us up. I was starstruck at that because I got nervous at first. Another one was meeting, I didn't even know, we were doing Trash in the Can for Tarzan album. Rosie O'Donnell did the voice of it. She did her version, but Phil Collins, who did the score, wanted to have a different feel to it, almost like a percapella kind of thing. So we heard about this, and they said, you know, Phil Collins is doing this thing, and they want you to go to the studio and record this song. So we're thinking, okay, we're just going to go and record it, have fun, and leave. We walk in, and Phil Collins is there. I had no idea he was going to be there. I was like, hey, what's going on? I was like, hi, Phil Collins. How are you? And then he goes in the studio with us, and we're like, what are you doing in the booth? He goes, I'm going to sing the song with you. Like, really? It was like the craziest thing. I think the only time I ever became speechless, though, was I met Christopher Reeves. I'm a huge Superman fan. And this was after his accident. And him and his son and his wife came to the show. One of our shows was more of a theater show, too, is when we still were just starting to get popular. And I just stood at the Superman trunk like a dork, and I just stood there. And everybody just looked at me. I was like, what? And they're all waiting for me to say it. I'm like, I have nothing to say. This is freaking awesome. I'm like, let me just soak this in right now. And the cool thing that I have it on my bedstand literally every day. Well, I used to go to my bedstand. Now I just moved to a new house and now it's on this mantle. And I keep it everywhere. His wife signed it for me. He had a bunch of pictures and it said, you know, from one Superman to another. And it was cool because she's authorized to sign. Obviously, she passed away as well, but she was authorized to sign his name. And he literally dictated, you know, said, hey, for what? And he's saying this to me right as I'm standing. I'm like, oh, this is pretty cool. Like, this is awesome, you know, and that was, yeah, for me, that was one of the really surreal moments. But again, it's all of it so freaking surreal. It really is. When you start to really think about it, I mean, I worked with Celine Dion on stage. We did this stuff at Radio City Music Hall for her special. And it was like, we're singing next to Celine Dion. This is crazy. Or we were at the Grammys one time rehearsing, and we're literally rehearsing this acapella breakdown because the Grammys, I think we did, it was This I Promise You. It was like a black and white thing, and it turned almost like to color. It's one of the first times, because when we do a lot of the songs and touring, there's a lot of background sweeteners, which means our background vocals are kind of recorded, so you're hearing that almost like the album. Leads are sung live, we still sing our backgrounds, but our acapella is completely acapella. There's no track, there's no nothing. So we practice that stuff. So for the Grammys, if you ever watch on YouTube, it's a Grammys thing, it is completely live, there's no sweeteners, no nothing, so we rehearse, rehearse, rehearse. Rehearsing in a bathroom in our room, and all of a sudden Paul Simon walks in, and we're like, "What are you doing?" And we just both all of us stopped. I was like, "It's freaking Paul Simon!" And he goes, "No, keep going." He goes, "That's why I came in. This is really good." Just sat there folding his arms. I was like, "Dude, is Paul Simon just sitting there listening to him doing acapella? This is awesome!" So it's again, it's one of everything. Yeah, that was it for me. It's not like, oh, you know, peeps, those are my friends. It's always surreal because I have those people I always looked up to and listened to. And now it's interesting when it's the flip side. You know, it's really weird to where I was doing the MTV Awards, when we did with Justin. And when we, after we walked backstage, as I'm walking backstage, Drake's walking by. It was a entourage. So literally it's one of those things that, hey, Drake, how's it going? I said, hey, man, congratulations. He stopped. He's like, hang on a second. I'm like, what? He goes, dude, thank you. I'm like, for what? He goes, bro, I watch him. I'm like, yeah, and sing. He's like, no. I saw you in Rent. I saw you in Little Shop. I came to the shows. I was like, are you serious? He's like, yeah, man. He goes, no, much respect. I was like, thank you. It was a lot. It was weird. It was like NSYNC died and come back to life when we were walking through MTV for that thing. It was so weird. Because it was people like, you guys are really here. You're all together at the same time. This is weird. He's like, yeah, it's been a couple of years, but it's all right.
Thank
you.
You're
welcome.
Hi.
Thank you, I know.
You always wore a Superman necklace, and I was like, oh my god, he's a nerd too. So I got it. But anyway, my question is, what was your favorite music video to do?
Favorite music video to do, I believe, was, I have to think of the song now, from the video. I think it was, Where Were the Marionettes? And we're on the shelves, those big, big things. We were dressed up as, what was it?
It's gotta be Violet.
Good morning, everyone. It's gonna be me. And one of the reasons why Wayne Isha directed that, but actually a lot of that stuff was our input of what we wanted to do. And I remember I kept yelling at him, like, listen, I know you want to do the green screen stuff. It's fine to do it once in a while, but if we do with the shelves, I want real shelves as if we are little miniatures. And we walked into the soundstage. It was the craziest thing. It literally were these huge shelves. They had a beetle car bug on the bottom of it and a motorcycle. And they were in boxes like they were toys. And when you see it, it looks kind of fake, but though that's actually real. Say they were rappel and we're coming down to the other those other shelves. That's all real. The only one that's fake is when we tip over the domino. That was all green screen pretty much. But everything else was real. It was like, this is the coolest thing. And it was our concept. I think it was one of the funner videos. That was fun. Yeah, that was the best one. Except it was brutal. Because the makeup we were in it for legitimately 24 hours. There's videos of us literally sleeping in it because we started at 7 a.m. with the makeup, and they took the makeup off at 7 a.m. the next day, which sucked.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, guys, we are